I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
Last night, President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump both secured enough delegates to formally clinch the nominations for their respective parties. 2024 is officially a rematch. Now that the candidates are set, I had a question. What happens to the people who have been loudly expressing their discontent with these candidates? On the Democrat side, of course, that has meant voting uncommitted, as in very pointedly not voting for Biden in the primary, even though he's been the only viable option.
There's been all these uncommitted campaigns on the Democratic side to get voters to cast these protest votes against Biden, most notably in Michigan and Minnesota and Washington, we saw this week. And in Michigan, there were more than 100,000 voters that turned out, I think thanks to in part to sizable Arab population, students in college campuses.
That is Jesus Rodriguez. He reports on politics for the Post's Style section.
So I went to Michigan to observe the Listen to Michigan movement, which is a grassroots movement to convince a lot of Arab American voters and voters in general to vote uncommitted in the Democratic primary. I wanted to figure out where it goes from here, and specifically, what is this going to look like in November? I want to talk to this one guy, this organizer with Listen to Michigan, and his name is Adam Abusala.
How are you, Miso? Congratulations, Miso. I know you worked hard, too.
He's a pretty young organizer there that had been working with Listen to Michigan. He is Palestinian-American himself, and he had been pretty fired up about getting people in his own community to vote uncommitted in the primary. One of the places where I met Adam was at this election watch party that Listen to Michigan organized on election night.
Biden, what is he in November? The
thing that interested me the most about Adam was that he had been a Biden organizer in 2020, and now he was on the other side of things. And I wanted to get his thoughts about why he had gone through this transformation, what made him so committed to this new kind of way of thinking, mindset that he was having, where he does not want to see Biden reelected. And he thinks that what Biden needs to do in 2024 in November is lose.
You know, with Biden losing his reelection, I hope that's one thing that people learn from when they see him lose, is that they need to start having those important conversations. Again, it's not just with our community, but with other communities where, like, being hurt by Democrats just continuing to stay silent on certain things.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers, and it's Wednesday, March 13th. Today, we take you inside the uncommitted movement, and we follow this organizer, Adam, a Democrat with a very controversial stance on what should happen in November. So tell me more about Adam and who he is, and just a little bit about his life.
So Adam Abusala is a 23-year-old Palestinian-American from Dearborn. His grandparents, his father's side of the family, had left Beit Hanina, which is near Jerusalem, around the 1967 war there. They had come to Detroit in the 1970s, and he had gotten really involved in local politics with Democrats. He works in local government now. At one point, he ran for office for sort of like a local state representative office.
Wait, as a 20-something-year-old?
Yeah. He might have been like 20 or 21 or something like that. But he's just really fired up. He volunteered for Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who was the first Palestinian-American woman to be in Congress. There's like some shared history between their families. So he had volunteered in all these different campaigns. In 2020, he was very much a Bernie Sanders guy. He liked the way that he talked about Palestine and the way that he would approach the Middle East. But then eventually, when Bernie Sanders lost, he kind of threw all of his support behind Biden. His mindset at the time was that, you know, Donald Trump had been really dangerous and a threat to the Arab American community. And he didn't think that Biden was perfect by any means, but he saw him as sort of this chance to move away from this hateful rhetoric that he saw coming during the Trump years.
And what did his organizing for Biden look like? Like, what were the things that he was doing to try to help get Biden elected as president?
He told me that he would leave his house in the morning, not come back until the evening. He organized all these different events to get out the vote.
Hey friends, my name is Adam. I live in Dearborn, Michigan, and I'm proud to be working on the Biden campaign this election.
He would record himself in these videos that were posted to social media, sort of talking about his own personal experience and appealing to Michiganders.
Joe Biden and Kamala Harris understand that everything is on the line this November. From our healthcare to our immigration to education to the Supreme Court, all of that is on the ballot.
There was this trunk or treat that he talked about. Keep in mind, this is at the beginning.
Trunk or treat?
Yeah. Keep in mind, this is at the beginning of the pandemic. So there were all these like car rallies that people were going to because you couldn't, you know, congregate in close groups.
I forgot about that. The 2020 car rallies.
I know. I was like, what is a trunk or treat? Why? Anyway, knocking on doors, phone banking, text banking. These were some of the things that he said that he did. His birthday ended up coinciding with the election period, November 6th, which was a few days after Election Day, and the day before Biden was officially declared the winner. And his parents actually bought him this Oreo cake from Dairy Queen that said, like, happy birthday, Adam, Biden 2020.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that tells you something. If he's excited to have, like, Biden's name on his birthday cake,
he was committed. He came off as very committed to this Biden campaign.
Yeah. And I imagine that the moment where maybe that started to change was October 7th. Can you talk a little bit about how that day played out in terms of its impact on him and his views on how Biden was handling this very difficult moment?
I don't think Adam necessarily thought that Biden was his perfect president before October 7th. There were a lot of disagreements that he had with him on, you know, education, immigration, healthcare. I mean, remember, this was a Bernie Sanders guy, right? So very different political ideologies. But what he told me is that, you know, for him and for the Dearborn community, October 7th was kind of this decisive date in some ways. You know, people sort of don't live the same way, don't work the same way because of the sizable Palestinian American community. And it sort of weighs heavily on them, on the community, as they're moving through daily life. And for him, you know, he told me that he had family in the West Bank and, you know, he's constantly worried about them. And this is partly why he feels so committed to this cause. So one of the things that we did with Adam in the lead up to this election night was a lot of driving. He does a lot of driving. And he would talk to me a lot about his feelings around the war, around his family, and what this election means for him.
A lot of people in life have like that one issue that they're like willing to like die for. And Palestine is that one issue. Because of the experiences that my family has gone through, my parents and my grandparents, that they were oppressed. And I know that, you know, Palestinians deserve to live in peace and dignity, that we are human beings. And I feel that we are great people. I'm not saying we're better than anyone else, but we're also not like beneath anyone.
And what were the ways in which he felt that what he started seeing from the American government wasn't what he thought was right?
I think he felt really betrayed in a lot of ways.
Israel has the right to defend itself and its people, full stop. There's never justification for terrorist attacks. And my administration's support for Israel's security is rock solid and unwavering.
He really wanted Biden to talk about a ceasefire, and that is a permanent ceasefire as opposed to a temporary one or a humanitarian pause, as the administration has put it. He wanted to see him acknowledge Palestinians more in the early statements that were coming out. He wanted to see him at least kind of question the military aid that we were sending to Israel, and he didn't see those things coming out of the administration.
There's no accountability. So for me, I can't trust him. I do know that trust cannot be rebuilt.
And so then how did he decide to get involved in this, like, uncommitted protest movement?
Well, he was already pretty active in local politics and well-known in the community. As I understand it, the Listen to Michigan organizers, some of the founders of that campaign came to him and asked him to help organize and volunteer. What that ended up looking like was he was training volunteers, a lot of driving around town, you know, carrying supplies and literature, posters, things like that.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you? Good, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Just wanted to check in. Do you need any water or breakfast or snacks or anything?
You are so awesome. No,
I appreciate
you. And so when we talk about the uncommitted movement writ large, I think that there's different kind of takes on what they're trying to achieve. But like, what is the stated goal of this movement in terms of why they wanted people to not vote for Biden in the Michigan primary?
The main idea was to lodge a protest vote. So they wanted people to see their votes not as necessarily kind of a given that they're going to vote for Biden, but rather kind of use their votes as a show of strength. And so to say, send the message essentially with their votes and say, we are in disagreement with the way the administration is handling this. We would like to see some changes before November. I think specifically those changes for Listen to Michigan, as they stated it, include calling for a permanent ceasefire and withdrawing funding for the war effort.
And it's basically a pressure campaign to kind of put pressure on the Biden administration to say, look, we think that you need to shift policy here.
It's essentially a pressure campaign, as you put it. I think they emphasized sending this message, and they had a lot of sort of like political weight behind them as well. You know, Rashida Tlaib endorsed them, former Congressman Andy Levin endorsed them, and there were a lot of sort of these high-powered political figures that were getting behind this movement and trying to get out the vote. And in some ways, they succeeded, right? Like, they had a stated goal of 10,000 votes, and they ended up getting 101,000.
I'm curious how Adam's goal in all of this compared to what the stated goal was of the uncommitted campaign.
The way Adam put it to me is that he wasn't necessarily seeing this as a bargaining chip. He's not saying, change course on policy in Gaza so that you may earn my vote back. He's saying, no matter what you do, it's way too late. It's 30,000 people way too late, which is a death toll in Gaza. There's no way you can convince me to vote for you in November in the general election.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty, I think that's way further than a lot of people and even a lot of these uncommitted voters in Michigan feel. I'm curious for Adam going around phone banking, door knocking, what was it like to spend some of that time with him and seeing how he was helping to kind of put out this message?
There was this exchange that sticks out of my mind with this one voter who was kind of outside this precinct, was one of the volunteers for another campaign that Adam was helping out with that had to do with local school funding.
Rocky! How are you, Rocky?
Pretty good.
Doing okay?
Lucky, alhamdulillah.
And he was kind of like, oh, I already voted, and I would love to see Biden reelected.
Got it. I'm going to vote for Biden pretty soon, in November.
Yeah.
Biden's going to make it again. I'll be happy if Biden wins it again.
Yeah.
You want to vote for Biden, bro?
No.
Nice.
Because look what he's doing to the Palestinians.
Who you want, then? No, Trump. Trump's screwing everybody up.
I don't want Trump and I don't want Biden.
I think this exchange shows no one's questioning the fact that Biden's support in Michigan is really solid. He won the primary by a huge margin anyway. But the thing that Adam really cares about and what he says he's going to continue talking to these voters about is November. It's not just this one vote in the primary, but November. This gentleman had already cast his vote. But Adam still felt that he needed to try to convince him, try to give him his side of things about how he felt about the war in Gaza.
After the break, we hear more from Adam, and he defends his desire to hurt Biden's chances in such a high-stakes election. We'll be right back.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
So on election night, to see that 13% of Democrats who'd voted in that primary had voted uncommitted, and that this was, as you pointed out, more than 100,000 people, what was Adam's reaction to that? Like, did he feel proud? Did he feel like he, like his work had been successful?
I think he was really surprised. He had told me earlier that evening that he was kind of hoping for around 35,000 votes, and then he ended up getting three times that, essentially.
You came late to the party.
We went to this after party or watch party that the Listen to Michigan campaign had, was hosting at this restaurant. And there was a lot of dancing. People were, like, hugging each other. People were just really pumped up. And Adam was kind of, like, going along, hugging people. But, you know, after that, we kind of went back to this community center that he had been working out of, and he told me that he felt kind of conflicted in some ways, that it's not for him to celebrate necessarily, but kind of like what's next. And for him, what's next is November, because he said that he's going to continue organizing, he's going to continue knocking on doors and try to spread the message that he believes in.
For me, it's not a win. It's just one step, like less that we have to talk about in our advocacy, because we are going to continue to advocate for Palestine. It's not just a ceasefire that I want to see. I want to see an end to the occupation. So I think this is one less thing that, you know, maybe we'll be advocating for, but we will still be on the streets for Palestine and still be showing up to people's offices and calling their offices.
So this was all in the Michigan primary last month. And then we saw more recently Super Tuesday. A few other states had some, I don't know, sizable uncommitted or like the equivalent of uncommitted contingent in the votes. But it wasn't like an overwhelming message that was sent. And I think that gets to some of the conversations that I feel like I've had recently about how significant or effective this movement is. Because I think a lot of people look at this and say, this is a bluff. Like, yes, many of these people like don't think that Biden is on the right side of this issue, that he could be doing more to protect the lives of Palestinians. But also, like, these are not people who are going to go out and vote for the guy who wanted the Muslim ban and who doesn't seem like particularly concerned about, you know, the lives of people struggling in conflict zones in other places around the world. Either what do you say to that, or what do you think that Adam would say to that? Like, that sure, Biden isn't good on this, but that Trump would be way worse and that no one is actually going to vote for Trump instead.
Adam's not going to vote for Trump. Adam has said, I don't want a Trump presidency, but I also don't want a Biden presidency. And I think some of that sentiment about, you know, the what people see as dangers coming from a second Trump presidency, in particular for Arab Americans or for people of color, was really evident in some of like the phone banking that I saw, where callers would say, like, are you crazy? You're asking me to, you know, vote for essentially somebody who I see as racist, somebody who I see as misogynistic. Because in some ways, people take this uncommitted vote as a vote against Biden. But when it comes down to it, you know, Adam says he would not like a Trump presidency or a Biden presidency, but that he would take, you know, a Muslim ban over his family being in danger of being killed.
You can't ban people that are dead.
So for me, if you give me two options and you said, do you want a Muslim ban or do you want your family killed? I'll choose the Muslim ban.
So it sounds like in some ways he actually does stand by the idea that, like, maybe a Trump presidency, when it comes to this specific issue of the lives of people in Gaza, like, a Trump presidency might not actually be worse than the Biden presidency right now.
Yeah, he's grappling with that, right? A lot of this is kind of ever-changing. Trump had made some statements before I was in Michigan where he had said he had criticized Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister. You know, in more recent days, he's made other statements where he said that he does support the way that Israel is handling this war. But I think for Adam, the main thing is that he thinks that Democrats will not learn how to not take his community for granted unless Biden loses.
For me, what I would like to see is for Biden to be a learning opportunity for other people. That, number one, they can't take, you know, the Arab community, like minority communities, for granted. That, number two, they need to come to us and understand, like, what our concerns are rather than us going to them to just vote for them and, like, call it a day. Like, they need to come to us, I think.
So for him, it's not so much that he thinks Trump would necessarily be better. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. Maybe he'll stand up to Netanyahu, maybe he wouldn't. But at the end of the day, for him is, I don't want Democrats to keep counting on our votes. And essentially the way he's used as is like paying lip service to our community so that then they can turn around and like do enact policies that will harm us.
I hear that, that he thinks it's important in this moment to make a point that a president who allows what some people call a genocide to happen, like, shouldn't be able to be president anymore. But I also think a lot of people are going to hear this and say, well, this is really short-sighted, because there are a lot of reasons to believe that the future for Gazans under a Trump presidency would be worse than what that future looks like under a Biden presidency. And that in terms of the potential for humanitarian aid from the U.S. and, you know, the potential for pushing for a ceasefire, that some of that stuff goes out the window if Trump is president again. And that, like, what Adam is trying to do here is going to actively undermine the future for people in Gaza right now.
You know, I put the question to Adam at one point where he says, like, what could be worse than 30,000 plus people dead? And I kind of said to him, more, like tens of more thousands of people who might die under the Trump presidency, the war effort being even worse. I think for him, he is focused so much on the next few months and November and the ways that he wants to protest and, in some ways, I think, punish a Democratic Party for what he sees as a total disaster in Gaza. There is a big unknown for him of what the Trump presidency would actually mean for Gaza. He thinks the approach would be different. He thinks he might stand up to Netanyahu. He knows that support for Israel is still going to continue, but at least he thinks the exchanges between the United States government and the Israeli government might not be as amicable.
And to be clear, I mean, 100,000 votes in Michigan is not necessarily an overwhelming number of people, but also that is a bigger number than the amount of votes that Donald Trump won Michigan by in 2016. So what are the possible ways that this uncommitted movement could actually change the outcome of the election in November?
So this is not necessarily a new phenomenon. Michigan has a history of using uncommitted as a protest vote. This happened in 2008 when Obama ran kind of an uncommitted campaign that young and black voters were really energized by against Clinton. In 2012, he also faced an uncommitted vote as the incumbent. But I think what we shouldn't lose sight of here is that Donald Trump won Michigan by 10,000 votes in 2016. Biden won it by 150,000 votes in 2020, which is a really sizable margin compared to Trump. But 101,000 votes is not nothing. And Biden doesn't need to win Michigan to win the presidency, but it would help a lot. And in the past few elections, whoever has won Michigan has gone on to win the presidency. So you can see that this is at least sizable enough to capture the attention of the Biden campaign.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, but I think it's still worth stating. I mean, this isn't just about like people who would potentially look at these two candidates and say, well, I find Biden's policy on the war in Gaza so intolerable that I must vote for Trump. It's really just like people could decide to stay home and that staying home and that lack of turnout on the Democrat side could have a pretty profound impact.
And I think what's interesting here actually is the way Adam sees it is that what would be more effective is if he can have or if the Arab American community has a really high turnout but skips the top of the ticket. So they'll vote down ballot and they'll vote for a member of Congress and they'll vote for senators and all of that stuff. But then when it comes to Joe Biden, they will decide not to vote for him. He thinks that that's a much stronger show of force.
That's interesting. I'm curious, to what extent does it seem to you that the Biden administration is paying attention now more than they have in recent weeks to both the uncommitted voters and this larger risk that maybe some of Biden's policy decisions in Gaza could actually have a real impact on the election?
I think in the aftermath of the uncommitted campaign in Michigan, you did see the Biden administration enact some policy changes, I think, in the hopes in some ways that they can turn us around before November. You saw some of the humanitarian aid drops in Gaza. You saw him announcing at the State of the Union that there was a humanitarian port that's going to be built in Gaza. And then he was also caught on a hot mic saying that he's going to have a come to Jesus moment with Netanyahu. We can't say for sure what's the motive behind those actions. But I think it wouldn't be total coincidence that these policy changes are coming after the uncommitted campaign. Now, what the Michigan organizers would say to that and what other young people would say to that is that's not enough. How are you going to airdrop aid to people in Gaza when U.S. military equipment is also going to the Israeli government? All of these are in some ways mitigations of the war that's already happening rather than calling for a permanent ceasefire.
So what is next for the uncommitted movement and for Adam?
The uncommitted campaign was really organized and run by younger people, younger organizers, younger voters. And I think a lot of young voters are energized and appalled in some ways by this issue, you know, because of what they're seeing on TikTok, on social media, on their phone screens, on television. And they're a sizable chunk of the U.S. population, of the voting population. I think what you're going to continue to see until November is either young voters who turn out in droves to vote and then write in Gaza or write in Free Palestine or just simply vote uncommitted as a continuation of this protest vote. And that's what the Democratic Party and the Biden campaign is having to answer to. I think for Adam, he sees himself being pulled toward those movements or toward those groups because he's kind of an organizer through and through.
Our advocacy and like our work doesn't stop at the ballot box and it doesn't stop with someone getting elected. I mean, not only do you elect people, but then you also hold them accountable when they're in office, regardless of who it is. But with Biden, I know that from now till November or now till just December when he's out of office, that we're going to have to continue advocating. If he somehow wins again, we have to continue organizing after that. Trump wins, we're going to have to continue organizing. I just don't see an end to the work that we're doing here locally.
He doesn't really take a moment to rest. This is kind of what he's always been about. So I think he's really committed now to seeing Biden lose in November. And, you know, what he said while I was there is that he's going to try to do anything he can to do that.
Jesus, thank you so much for bringing us this story. It was really fascinating.
Thank you.
Jesus Rodriguez covers politics for the Post Style section. Before we go, some news on the TikTok front. Today, the House overwhelmingly passed a bill to force TikTok to split from its parent company or face a national ban. The legislation was approved with 352 votes for it and just 65 against, which tells you something about how cracking down on TikTok has become a pretty bipartisan issue. Lawmakers are worried that TikTok's parent company in China, ByteDance, presents national security risks. Today, you heard Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi talk about this on the floor of the House.
This is not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe, a winner.
President Biden has said that he would sign the bill if it came to his desk. But it still has to go through the Senate. And some lawmakers there have said that the bill might violate the Constitution. And one more thing that I've just been dying to talk about. This whole mess with Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, and this Photoshop job that is fueling conspiracy theories about her 2.5-month disappearance from the public eye. Maybe you, like me, have been obsessed, and you're asking questions like, where is Kate? Is she alive? Are we all making a big deal about nothing? But maybe you're looking at these headlines and wondering, what is everybody talking about? Our colleagues have put together a great explainer on this, laying out where this recent controversy came from and why all these people are suddenly concerned that Princess Kate is not okay. You'll find a link to that story in our show notes and at postreports.com. And to access more of our coverage, become a subscriber to The Washington Post by going to washingtonpost.com/subscribe. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Sabi Robinson. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Maggie Penman. If you thought this episode was interesting or enlightening, please send it to a friend or leave us a review wherever you're listening. I'm Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.